Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The good news is Steph Curry has returned. It is official. That is good news. Is it not, Draymond Green?
I mean, it's great to have him back out there. You know, he's the gravity that he pulls and, you know, just the confidence you get from just him being out there was huge. I thought he looked good. Probably missed a couple shots that he'll make pretty soon. Just really getting back in that flow of rhythm. But come out, first game back, 32 minutes. Pretty efficient night, but he looked really good.
He was 8 of 20 from the floor, 5 of 13 from three-point land, 6 of 6 perfect from the free throw line. He had 27, 6, and 2. Those are points, assists, and rebounds. He only had 2 turnovers, which I thought was a nice, good sign of Steph Curry having himself a good first game back. But really, the good of Curry's performance came in that fourth quarter where he dropped 16 and all of a sudden put a little gas back in the Warriors' tank that made you think, are they going to win this game? Because, boy, they started slow once again, man. These slow starts, they continue to linger. Head coach Steve Kerr.
I don't know the answer to that. I know that we picked up a ton of fouls early in this game in the first quarter. We had 4 in the first 5 minutes or so. That always sets a bad tone. So maybe it has something to do with that. But, yeah, it's been a bad stretch of starts for us.
It really is weird. Why isn't this team a little bit more ready to go from jump ball? I don't think we can blame it on anyone. I don't think there's any empirical evidence to say it's that guy. It's a lack of whatever that is that doesn't have it right. But it's just, it's odd.
They're an erratic team, and they behave erratically. I mean, that's how they got in the mess they're in now.
So some erratic behavior you'd think would come with like, oh, they did get off to a good start tonight.
And they occasionally do. I mean, the problem is every good thing they do comes in short bursts. Every bad thing they do comes in short bursts. If they were a bad team over a long stretch of time, you'd see an 8 or 9 game losing streak. But you don't. You see them hovering around 500 as though, you know, that's where the anti-venom is and you just got bit by a snake. You know, this last 5-game winning streak is the longest time they've been either good or bad. So, I mean, it's just, that's why I say they're erratic. You cannot trust them. I mean, at least for most of the year.
And you really can't trust them when they're out on the road. Again, here's...
Oh, you can trust them.
Oh, yeah.
You know exactly what you're going to get there.
Just can't trust them to win that game.
No.
Which is why the next 2 games, again, the last time they won on the road was at Oklahoma City. They got a game at Memphis after that, Tuesday, Thursday this week. Steve Kerr on struggling away from Chase Center.
I've been asked that a lot this year, and it's difficult to pinpoint anything. Teams shoot way better from 3 against us at home than they do at Chase. Again, that wasn't a problem tonight. 11 for 33, you know, and after the first quarter, we held their free throws down. So I thought we executed defensively well tonight. This was not a game where I walk away saying, what were we doing defensively? I liked the defense. It was pretty sound. But they did a great job. Darvin's done a great job with this team. You know, he's really, you know, found combinations that work. He's had to deal with, you know, injuries to LeBron and AD, and they made a great trade, you know, over the deadline, and then so they've improved quite a bit. And so I thought they played really well. They only turned it over 9 times total tonight, and that was a big part of the game. And I think they ended up with 4 more field goal attempts, 4 more free throws. In a game like this, you know, that's basically 6 possessions, and that's the difference in the game.
Look, the Lakers shot 44% last night. They grabbed 10 offensive rebounds in the game. And the Warriors, had a rough night from the floor. I mean, it's a make-or-miss league, and they were only making them at 39% from the floor last night. They played representative defense. They gave up 113 points, which for them ain't bad, especially on the road. The thing that bothered me the most, though, was that Jonathan Kuminga, who wasn't good, wasn't given any grace to figure it out in a game where Iguodala comes in, and Iguodala does give you something defensively, but he gives you nothing offensively. And when you're playing with multiple forwards who represent no offensive threat, we're looking at you, Looney, we're looking at you, Draymond, and we're looking now at Andre Iguodala. If he's going to be playing, he's going to be playing in the front court, and he's not much of a scoring threat. And I don't think Andre Iguodala is going to be a guy locking down any major NBA entity again. Maybe for a possession or two, but I don't think Andre's got like a great game necessarily left in him. I don't know.
Well, again, that assumes that the plan going in was for him to play 15 minutes, which I don't think it was. I think most of the minutes that he got came because Kuminga struggled so badly. And that if Kuminga had played as he normally does, Iguodala wouldn't have gotten much run at all. Because I don't think it's about Iguodala. I think it's about Kuminga. Last night he was overmatched, and he showed it. And you can't keep a guy in there when he's just getting routinely worked.
Why can we live through Anthony Davis growing pains, but not Jonathan Kuminga growing pains?
Because Anthony Davis is an infinitely better player who makes a ton more money and is more vital to the Lakers.
Anthony Lamb.
Because I think Lamb has given them more reliable minutes. He's not special, but he gives them some reliable minutes that Kuminga has been doing for the most part. I think this was a one-game deal where Kuminga just wasn't very good and they couldn't keep him out there because they're trying to win the game. When a guy plays poorly, he shouldn't play more.
I just think he had a major role in beating the Pelicans and Clippers, and he is... He's someone who I think needs to be allowed to play through his mistakes.
I think this is the time of year where you don't get to do that. And he's gotten to play through his mistakes earlier in the year. He's the guy who's gotten run because he's earned that he deserves it. Last night was a game where he was not very good at all, and I don't think you keep a guy in when he's struggling that badly.
I think you're almost cutting off your nose, though, to spite your face, because there's no point in time I'm looking at the Warriors and I'm thinking, you know what decision they should really make with their rotation right here, right now? They should become less athletic. I don't think the Warriors should ever be looking to strategically become less athletic, and I think you become less athletic when Jonathan Kuminga's off the court.
But if you're getting the kind of athleticism where he's just getting overwhelmed, what's that getting you? I mean, I think this is a one-game deal. I don't think they've suddenly soured on Kuminga as a notion. I think this was one game where it didn't fit for him. And I think you have to respond to that. I don't think you're going to see him playing 10 minutes or being a coach DNP tomorrow night. I think they like him. I think they prefer him. But last night, he didn't give him much option.
Draymond talked about getting Iguodala back into the mix.
Every time Andre's on the floor, you're going to get positive results. That's who he's been his entire career, and especially in his years here. Just understands the game at a totally different level than most. And so, you know, just to have him out there with his IQ, yeah, he didn't score, but I'm not sure his game has ever been predicated on whether he scores or not.
So, look at this. The Warriors have themselves two opportunities to win a couple of games here on the road before coming home for about as big of an ask as you can have on your own home court. The Milwaukee Bucks will be here on Saturday. These next three games, they're big, man. The Warriors are all out of mulligans. So here we go. Every single game feels like it's a high leverage game. And if you are tired of indeed Anthony Lamb, you're not going to have to worry about him anymore. He is out of game time. He is out of games to play. He has crossed the 50-game threshold, and as of right now, unless they open up a roster spot and sign him to it, he's not going to play again. I think they will do that. I think they want to do that. Steve Kerr talked about Anthony Lamb's final game in the meantime last night.
I'd like to have Lamb on the roster. He plays an important role for us because he connects a lot of lineups with his ability to space the floor and shoot the three. And then he just plays the way we've always played with, 0.5 basketball, make a quick decision, drive it, pass it, shoot it. And then he's big and versatile enough to guard multiple spots. So he connects a lot of our lineups. When we play two bigs, we can have him at the three or you can play him at the four. So he's been really helpful for us this year, and we'd love to get him on the roster, and we'll see what happens.
When he says 0.5 basketball, I always think it's a half a basketball.
That is a half a basketball. But look, should they have tinkered with his service time a little bit more judiciously, other than to get to this point now where they got to wait for an expiring 10-day to come and go before they can actually make the roster machinations that would return Lamb to their rotation?
I suppose there's
going to be quite a bit of hindsight being 2020 attached this year. Like, you can feel it.
Oh, of course you will. I mean, when you're coming off a championship and you're a 500 team, there's going to be a lot of that. I also think that, a lot of the master plan has had to be abandoned at different times because different guys have gotten hurt or played poorly or any number of things. And I think they probably used Lamb more than they intended to early on. And I think now they've gotten jammed up, and now they have to figure out whether they really want him or not, or whether Steve Curry is just being nice. Maybe he just said nice things about Lamb. Maybe they don't have an intention to try to figure out a way to get him back on the roster. I just don't know that they have a ton of options other than getting him on the roster.
It feels like they got caught in between the players that they needed, the players that they have, the players that they didn't budget enough for, and then the buyout market that they decided they didn't want. It's again, we won't know what this looks like until it really ends. And if it ends with them repeating as NBA champions, we know nothing about basketball. Regular season basketball returns no data points that should ever be examined as what's about to happen ever again.
Well, I mean, that's probably was the lesson last year, because we didn't think anything was going to happen last year either.
No, but there was a suggestion. Like, early season success said maybe if they're right and healthy, they can give you they did look like the best NBA team in the NBA for about a 20-game stretch. They haven't had anything like that this year.
No. I mean, if they win this time, they've cheated the Reaper big time. But the truth is, I think they have been scrambling most of the year to try to find some kind of form to what they do. And I think it didn't help early when their second unit was awful. I think it didn't help that they never really got Wiseman untracked. I think it didn't help that Curry got hurt. I don't think it's helped that Wiggins is still out. I mean, they've been keeping this together with duct tape and sealing wax.
Curry's back, and he was asked, is there enough time to put Humpty Dumpty back together again with all the time that isn't left in the year?
Yes and no. Yes, in terms of the time frame we have to put it all together. The biggest difference is we didn't start out 18-2. So we're still in fifth, even though we lost. I have an outside shot of trying to get home court advantage, but the biggest goal, it's weird to say it, is like we're trying to win championships, but we're also trying to stay out the play-in too. Both can be true just based on what our challenge has been this year. And like I said, in terms of the rotations and the amount of guys that have played well this year that deserve opportunity, to find balance between staying ready, knowing when your minutes are going to be, knowing who you're going to be out there with, and finding the right combinations to finish the season strong so that whoever we potentially play in the playoffs, we know what our identity is. That's the challenge over the last 17 games, whatever it is.
I mean, I'm glad he said it. It is a little weird to be talking about defending an NBA championship at the same time just trying to avoid the play-in tournament. It doesn't feel like both conversations would run on the same track.
No, I mean, this is a weird team performing weird things in a weird year. By rights, a team with this road record should be out of it. I mean, deeply and profoundly out of it. They should be Orlando. But here they are. You know, a team known for defense that was this bad defensively for so long should be out of it. A team with this injury list probably should be out of it. But the Western Conference has one elite team. That's Denver.
One and a half. Phoenix looks pretty good.
Phoenix is getting there. They got to get clear of fourth before I start thinking about that.
Who makes it look easier than Kevin Durant? Good Lord. I mean, it's effortless.
And I'll tell you what, and I'm not trying to undercut your point, but if Kevin Durant doesn't look good against Dallas, you could maybe start making the case that he's done. But because Dallas, for some reason, doesn't defend, and he had the run of the building. I think Dallas is still a weird team that probably won't be trustworthy in the postseason. And that said, yeah, Durant has made it easy forever. I mean, he is, you want to talk about great old players? He's a great old player because he's old. And yet, right now you'd say, gee, I don't think he's got more than 6 or 7 good years left in him.
Right, which is...
And he's like, then again, 41.
Right, you could probably get a Hall of Fame career almost out of that 6 to 7 years the way that he plays.
Yeah, I mean, he looked ridiculously comfortable for not having been back for weeks.
Maybe more than any other sport. In basketball, the great ones just make it look so easy. Just effortless. Jordan made it look effortless. Steph makes it look effortless when he's on. LeBron makes it look effortless when he's on. I don't know if anybody out there makes it look more effortless than Kevin Durant. He's incredible.
Yeah, see, I never thought Jordan made it look effortless. He always looked like he was putting in more effort than anybody else because that's what drove him. I think Durant is different in that he does make it look effortless. He is a way, and this is a completely subjective judgment, he's a smoother player than Jordan was. Jordan was more explosive, and he was more, I'm better than you, and I will choke you until you admit it.
There was violence in Jordan's game.
Yeah, I don't sense any of that in Durant's game. Durant is, he's just silk.
Sophomore calling from Pacifica. You're on with Damon and Ratto. Hello, sophomore.
Hey, good afternoon, you guys. Good discussion, but I got to say, if Jonathan Kuminga deserves more time to get better, Andre Iguodala deserves a few games to get his feet under him after a long layoff. But that's, for now, that's all I got to say.
Sure. Sure. But, I mean, he's a 19-year NBA veteran. That guy should be... There's no one more qualified to just hop on the bike and start pedaling than that, right?
Nobody's going to hop on the bike after he's missed that much time. I don't care who it is. And I will repeat this again. I don't think the plan was to play him as much as they did yesterday. But Kuminga sort of forced their hand.
Well, look, I need to... At some point here, he is either... He needs to prove his worth. He needs to prove his worth for this team. If all he was around was for motivational and, you know, aspirational cat posters and, like, why this team needed another wise veteran presence in a locker room that should have enough of that already, I don't quite understand. Why this team decided to keep a non-functional player around for advice when they actually needed bodies is, again, something I don't quite understand. And now that they got him, they better play him quite a bit, because if he's going to prove his worth, he's going to have to be in midseason form come the postseason. And I haven't remembered Andre Iguodala being effective in any game since what? Before that last Houston series that went down at Oracle Arena. I mean, it's been a long time since this guy's given the Warriors a minute that mattered. So he better be locking up Kevin Durant in the postseason for possession after possession after possession. I like Andre Iguodala. I just don't understand why he's here.
He's here because A, he's affordable. B, he's a veteran presence that they know and trust. And C, and they've said this all along, and they said it at the start of the year, he's going to be the guy we rely on come the postseason. So
then I don't think your postseason is going to go very far.
Well, then
that's
maybe
the secret weapon.
I mean, they could certainly be dead wrong about this, but they haven't misled anybody in the way they've used them. And I'm not convinced that, you know, that they're misleading anybody now. I don't think they would have played him for as much as they did yesterday if Kuminga hadn't struggled so much. And I would be surprised if Iguodala played a ton tomorrow night, because I think Kuminga will be better. Because Kuminga doesn't usually put two games like that together. I mean, that's one of the things that's gotten him the minutes that he's gotten.
Right. So I'm surprised he doesn't get more house credit, though.
I don't think it's about house credit. It's about, what are you doing tonight for me? The house credit stuff, that's done. You know, it's game 65. You know, show your hand every night. It's not about house credit anymore.
Will in Berkeley. You're on 95.7 The Game. Will?
Good evening. Hey, guys. I think Ray is right about the whole cheat code that's happening right now with the Warriors. I think they have figured out some way to win constantly with these kind of ancillary players. But honestly, I feel that Iguodala is in some kind of like assistant coach training program, and they're just keeping him around to add him to the assistant coach list or something. But I think they should give him, I think they should give Dante some money, some of that money later on, because Dante, to me, is a new Iguodala. I mean, he is an amazing player. The assist that he was doing last night, I'm really, really impressed with this kid, and I really feel like he's going to go places.
You know, I really hope that they are looking at him as a piece of their future, but I don't know if they're going to keep him around at $12 million, and I think he's played himself into a $10, $12 million NBA contract. I don't know if you're going to see him beyond this year.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people think he'll be around next year. So it makes sense to me that, you know, that this wasn't, they didn't know what they had in him when they signed him. He's turned out to be better than they thought, and I think if they could figure out a way to keep him, they would.
He's their seventh best player. I mean, he's the second guy off the bench, right?
Yeah, no, I think they would love to figure out a way to keep him. Because you saw what happened last year when their seventh best player and their eighth best player, you know, basically lined up to get paid, they both ended up on other teams. That's part of the ongoing problem with their tax bill. You don't have the flexibility to keep guys you'd like to have. I think if they had to do it over again, they might have figured out a way to keep Payton. And maybe they, you know, maybe they don't do, you know, maybe they try to hold off the pool deal longer. I don't know. I don't have all the math in front of me. But I think one of the big shortcomings they've had this year is that they haven't been deep enough. And they've relied on guys who weren't ready to be relied upon. And they're paying for that.
Klay Thompson talked about the return of Steph Curry and Andre Iguodala in Los Angeles last night.
It's awesome. Anytime those two are on the court, especially together, it's just a beautiful thing. And it was so great having Steph back out there. And as the season progresses, he's just going to become his MVP self. So it was an awesome, awesome time.
Look good, feel good, play good. That formula's got to start translating on the road. You got to pick up some road wins here. You got two opportunities this week to do it. You got to at least split them. At the very least.
Now, you said they have to be 2-1.
So you can split these and still be 2-1 if you beat Milwaukee.
Well, let's worry about the road right now.
Right. So,
I mean, because Milwaukee's not at, of the three games, Milwaukee will be the most difficult, even if they're playing them in Curry's driveway.
Right. But the fact that game is at Chase Center means it's more likely to be won than any game. I mean, any game at the end of Curry's driveway, by definition, has to be harder to win than the one in Curry's driveway.
Well,
because that's just the way your whole year is gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you were talking about going 2-1 on the road, they've already lost one, so they can't split. If they're going to make you happy,
Sunday already happened. I'm talking about the next two games and then the one game they got on Saturday at home against Milwaukee.
Oh, I wouldn't even think about my Milwaukee yet. Why ruin your whole week?
I think about everything, Ray.
That's not healthy for you.
A non-stop thinker. Klay Thompson thinking about this team. He likes its confidence still.
You know, confidence is very high. I think I've stated this before. I'm never going to doubt this group or this franchise. We still got a lot of basketball left, and we can put ourselves in a great position to finish the year where we want to.
Look, here's the one good thing coming out of Los Angeles. They only gave up 113 points. You keep putting that defensive effort out on the court, it should get you somewhere. Because putting up a defensive effort that allows 125 gets you nowhere. 113 can at least get you somewhere. So keep doing that. Keep on keeping on, Golden State Warriors. You got nothing left to do between now and the end of the year. Then what, they got 17 games left? Can they win 10 of them? Can they go 10-7 here?
If they defend, sure.
Yeah.
If they don't defend, no.
Feels fair. Geno Smith, 3 years, $105 million up in Seattle. He will continue to be a problem for the 49ers or not, depending how they place the Seattle Seahawks. But there you go. That's the way the NFC West turns today. There is a little, I see, you know, everyone wants to bring up, like, well, what do you think about the 49ers quarterback situation? What do you think about the 49ers quarterbacks? Is it in flux? Is it in this? Is it in that? Is it in? It's actually in pretty good shape. I know that doesn't make for sexy sports talk radio, but let's be honest. They're in pretty good shape. They got two young guys they both think could be something special for them. Let them duke it out. Hopefully they got a clear starter and a clear backup by the time week one comes around. And week one isn't anytime soon. There's a lot of time between now and week one. They got a well-priced, hopefully lots of upside quarterback room. You want to add in a veteran before it's all said and done? Okay. But I don't know if that guy is, you know, breaking camp as on the depth chart, bringing a veteran as a camp arm, bringing a veteran as in case Purdy doesn't recover well or Lance doesn't develop with the way that you're hoping. Okay. But I keep on hearing all these people talking about the 49ers quarterbacks as if that should be a point of anxiety. It shouldn't be. Not anymore anyways.
Oh, sure it should. For one simple reason. Purdy will be coming off surgery starting Saturday.
I like that more than Garoppolo.
A guy coming off surgery.
Sure. That guy coming off surgery. Yes.
Okay. And if the surgery discovers more damage, do you still like that?
Well, considering that guy's just gravy time as it is.
The point is, we don't know. Right, and we definitely don't know about Lance.
We wouldn't know if they signed Lamar Jackson, then he would have stayed healthy beyond two games. So
that's where the anxiety is, though. They have a guy coming off surgery and a guy who hasn't played. I get why they would be anxious. But then again, it's a fan base that wants to be anxious about its quarterback no matter what. So I can't imagine what wouldn't make them anxious.
Not talking about the fan base. I'm talking about them. They should feel, I think, pretty good about it.
I think they're a little worried because they need to know what they're dealing with. And they don't know what they're dealing with right now. That said, it's also March 6th. So they don't have to really worry about it for another 4 months. I mean, they're not going to draft a quarterback, you wouldn't think.
No.
They're certainly not going to trade up to try to get one of them.
Maybe with the last pick in the draft. Do you see the Chicago Bears basically tipping their entire draft strategy to Peter King, who, of course, went with the news in his column? What the hell are they doing in Chicago? I swear to God. What would you be talking about? All the picks you can trade back for. Why would you create the illusion of we're not going to be taking a quarterback number one overall when that illusion actually serves you well?
Because I think everybody knows. And they've known it even before they shot off their mouth. I think it's common knowledge they're not going to take a quarterback. I mean, everything that they have tipped their hand about, even before the King article, was that they're happy with Justin Fields and that they've got to fix everything around him. So is there a benefit to them shooting their yaps off? Of course not. You know, I don't know why anybody ever talks to anybody about anything.
Why are we talking?
That's an excellent question.
Why are you listening?
That's another excellent question.
Is that your belly grumbling?
Yes, it is.
Are you hungry?
Damn right.
Well, half an hour away from dinner time. That's just the first time it's the first time I've heard your belly grumble over the mic.
Well, I've been working on it. No, I just don't think that, you know, that the Bears think that anybody is under the illusion they're going to do anything other than what they're planning to do, which is trade down.
Or still suck.
The Bears still suck. The Bears still suck. The Bears still suck. The Bears still suck. They really, 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 really suck. Yes, the Bears still suck.
We're not talking about Cal basketball either.
All that said, this is the one time when you would think that they'd have at least one position down. And it's a position they've never been able to fill since Sid Luckman roamed the earth. But this is such a clear thing to do that it's almost not worth keeping the secret. You know, why insult somebody? Just, you know, well, we don't know what we're going to do. Of course they know what they're going to do. They're going to trade down and try to get as many picks as possible and take anything other than a quarterback.
I'd be trading back multiple times for the same multiple pick and moving back and moving back and moving back and moving back. I mean, there's a way to rebuild an entire franchise from this one decision alone.
Yeah. The only flaw in that strategy is they're the ones picking.
Yeah, they still suck. Adam Silver. I don't know if you saw this piece of news or not, but he is in the mix, apparently, to become the next CEO of the Walt Disney Corporation. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver is on the shortlist to succeed Walt Disney Company CEO Bob Iger. Silver's contract with the league runs through 2024. A timeline for Silver or any other candidate to be hired at Disney is unknown at this time. I mean, if you're Adam Silver, you're securing your media contract, and then there's really nothing to do except be, what, a step and fetch it for a group of 30 billionaires that are going to run you ragged if you don't do their bidding. So, yeah, I think I would much rather step away from all that NBA nonsense and into a boardroom at Disney where you're going to be like, yeah, let's do more. Let's do another Incredibles film. That'll make us $180 billion, and let's stop. No more movies about Pocahontas, okay?
If it were that easy, Bob Iger wouldn't be the president again because he replaced the guy about 6 months ago, and now they're looking to replace him. Disney's had its own problems. And beyond that, I like the idea that one of the ways that Adam Silver can show his value to the Disney Corporation is by screwing the hell out of him in the next negotiations.
So apparently Adam Silver wouldn't be eligible to be on any Disney board because he's so involved in these negotiations. So if can you be CEO and not sit on the board at the same time, or you'd have to give up one? I don't know. Hey, look, either way, Adam Silver, CEO of Disney. Adam Silver, NBA commissioner. I think the CEO of Disney is the better job.
Might be. I mean, there's tons of money to be made, you know, making sure that all the owners' meetings are catered. I mean, Roger Goodell is making $66 million a year doing that.
He is.
And I don't know that being the CEO of Disney pays $66 million a year.
It definitely has a chance to pay $66 million a year more than the commissioner of the NBA does, though.
I think Silver's making somewhere in the neighborhood of 25. He'll make more money at Disney, there's no question. But I think there's a case to be made that Disney is more in flux than the NBA is right now. So it sort of depends on A, what Disney really wants, and B, whether Silver's the guy to do it. Because I don't know. I don't know how good he is outside a structure in which he's always worked either for David Stern or the owners. Because David Stern didn't work for the owners. The owners worked for him. He was the last strong commissioner in any league. And when he left, Adam Silver became a more conciliatory type of commissioner. And found out that every once in a while, that conciliation gets you in a jam. So I'm not sure that all we know is that somebody wants to float Adam Silver's name.
Look, Adam Silver caught one of the all-time breaks when he became commissioner, because in his very first act, he got to clean up one of the biggest messes that the league had.
I mean, come on.
That guy.
Except that he didn't clean it up. He was the guy who got to say they cleaned it up. The guys who cleaned it up were three owners who made the phone tree that said, we're going to get rid of this guy. And they did the cold calls to the other owners.
Sure, but he gets to wear the crown of look at what I did. And he did so publicly, and he didn't try to say this wasn't my doing. I mean, he embraced the role of look at what I did.
Yeah, but he went along with the fiction, but everybody knows it's a fiction.
Nobody but you and a few other crusty-ass writers know that it's a fiction.
It's been written over and over again.
Nobody.
Everybody who pays attention to it knows how it came down. Everybody else wants to believe the fiction that commissioners have this level of power that, in fact, we've seen over the years they don't have.
Right. Everyone wants to see a commissioner as a caretaker.
And moving an owner out is not a job that a commissioner can do without the owner's at his back telling him, we're going to do this, you're going to do the presser.
Having said all that, do you see that another NBA owner is out? Mark Lassery, the Milwaukee Bucks co-owner, has an agreement to sell his stake in the team to Cleveland Browns owner Jimmy Haslam and the Haslam Sports Group for $3.5 billion. Mark Lassery and another rich dude named Wes Edens. They bought the Bucks from Herb Cole back in 2014 for $550 million. As part of the sale, Cole promised to donate $100 million to help a new arena to help ensure that the team remained in Milwaukee. Now, under Lassery's tenure, the Bucks fulfilled their promise of the new arena, which opened in August of 2018. It's been a tremendous business success. Along with the team, the surrounding development, the Deer District, has been a smash hit for Milwaukee's downtown. This is an owner who bought an NBA asset, said he would invest in it, and has crushed it to the point where he is the Milwaukee version of Joe Lacob. He really is. Look, he got back-to-back MVPs for Giannis, which helped deliver a lot of business and a lot of victory to Milwaukee as they won their first title since 1971. In 2021, you're looking for one of the all-time buy and flipped this house NBA, you know, home improvement shows. He might be the host, Ray. He really might be the host. Mark Lassery just came in and crushed about a decade's worth of NBA ownership and investment that, I mean, he destroyed it. He, A+.
Well, he only owns 25. He only owns 25% of the Bucks. Edens is the big fish there. And What the Haslams bought into was that quarter share of the team. Edens is still the whale. And I don't know if he and Edens had a falling out or whether he just wanted to cash out.
Look at it this way. If you can drop, if you can be a guppy to the tune of $3.5 billion for your buyout, you live that really good guppy life.
That wasn't the buy. That was based on a valuation of $3.5 billion. What he came away with was $875 million.
Oh, $3.5 billion for the whole operation.
If the Haslams had bought the entire franchise, it would have cost $3.5 billion.
It's couch cushion money for the Haslams, I hate to say. The Haslams. Oh, yeah. Jimmy Haslam, by the way, inherited his fortune.
From daddy.
Yes. And his company owns a god level of truck stops and is worth about $50 billion. He owns the Cleveland Browns, the Columbus Crew, and he's done some very sinister dealing in his days. He is about as old-fashioned an oil billionaire who will leave the world a worse place than he originally found it, as you can find in your sports ownership suite. Jimmy Haslam.
He's a beauty.
Look at it this way. In a world of us and them, he's a them.
I don't think he's worth $50 billion. He's worth $4.8 billion.
No, the company. The company.
Oh, the company.
Is worth $50
billion. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't think he owns all of the company.
No, no one owns. Yeah, the buy-offs and sell-offs and stock up and all that stuff.
Yeah. But that said, I'm fascinated to know why he felt he wanted to buy into an NBA team that he doesn't have control of.
It's an easy investment. It's parking your money in a place that only grows. That's
well,
it.
I get that part. But he's a guy who has always had his hands around whatever he operated. I mean, Pilot J, he basically runs that. That's the truck stop army.
Yeah.
This is the one where he gets to sit in a room and listen to Wes Edens tell him what Wes wants to do.
Hey, maybe he's about to slowly and surely, you know, undercut by percentages. Wes, what would you like to go away? I mean, you got to get in the room before you can start throwing your weight around the room, and he's in the room now. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Maybe. You know, I was a little bit fascinated by this deal because, one, Lassery and Edens were trying to buy into English soccer. And then all of a sudden, that fell through the door. So
that feels like a pivot, right? I mean, is that what it is?
It might be that last week you say, you know what? I'm done chasing. And then Haslam was the first guy with a checkbook. But Haslam is not a guy who defers to others. That's why I'm interested.
Conference tournament week is one of my absolute favorite weeks of the year. It has begun. We actually got teams filling out automatic bids for the NCAA tournament. Selection Sunday is this Sunday. We'll let you know who got in early. You ready for the phrase dancing shoes? Good, because we're going to use it this week.
Fairleigh Dickinson backed their way in.
There you go, baby.
You saw that, right?
Yes, they got in the semifinals because the other team to qualify was already suspended from postseason.
No, they weren't suspended. When they joined the conference, they couldn't go to the tournament for 4 years. That was part of the deal.
It was a grandfathered in screw you guys.
Right, and the screw you guys get to play Fairleigh Dickinson tomorrow night. So FDU might have some load management to save guys for the tournament.
Hey, FD yourself, you know what I mean? Yeah.
You can have that banner. We'll go lose in the play-in game like dignified adults.
We'll let you know who's in. We'll let you know that we actually had a little sports movie history made over the week. And if you want to feel old, we will guarantee make you feel old with a quarter century anniversary that we'll tell you about next. Hopefully the dude abides.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
What's condition? My condition.
Used right from the clip in the movie, I'm guessing is where you're going there, Grandy. Part of the montage in the movie, The Big Lebowski. This is the first edition. Ray, stepped in to check what condition my condition was in. Can you name the lead singer of this group?
Oh, it's the first edition. It was Kenny Rogers.
That's right.
See what condition my condition.
Have you ever seen the movie The Big Lebowski?
I have not.
Wow. Okay, so I really recommend this one. Like, you would like this movie. It is beyond a cult classic. It is morphed into one of the most quotable movies of all time. And 25 years ago today, March 6th, 1998, is when it hit movie theaters. Yes, we're all old as dirt now. The Big Lebowski is 25 years old today. Written and directed by the Coen brothers. It's an A+. It's an actual masterpiece. It's one of Jeff Bridges' greatest performance. It is the greatest performance of John Goodman's entire career. Steve Buscemi, underrated and brilliant throughout the entire thing. The dialogue, the delivery, the writing, the White Russians, all of it. It's perfect. There are very few movies that reach the level of perfect. Ray, it's a perfect movie. Like Godfather, the original Godfather and Godfather 2. These are perfect movies. I think The Big Lebowski is maybe one of the only other movies I would ever insert into the "is this movie perfect" conversation. It's funny, another Coen Brothers movie, No Country for Old Men, which is another movie that if you've never seen that, I think you would really like. That borders on perfect as well.
Raising Arizona is the Coen Brothers movie I saw. And I wouldn't call it perfect, but I'd call it damn good.
It's a great movie. I'm glad that you see that that is a good movie. Because if you didn't, I'd be really worried about you. By the way, welcome back here as we're doing the end of the show, You're Older Than You Think You Are segment, because The Big Lebowski turns 25 today. You might want to win yourself a pair of tickets to see the Warriors and Spurs on March 31st. Well, all you got to do is download the Odyssey app and listen to everything we do, everything that happens all day long. And every single hour that you listen on the Odyssey app is an hour which you will be registered to win the tickets. You can do it up to 8 times per day. Listen 8 hours per day. That's all we ask. Download the Odyssey app now. What are you waiting for? Tickets to see the Warriors and Spurs are up for grabs on Monday, March 31st. And as always, Warriors tickets can be found at warriors.com to get what you need. If you are a college basketball fan, and even if you're not, I hope you become one this week, because we got ourselves one of the great weeks of college basketball. It is conference tournament week. We are 6 days out from Selection Sunday. You were right, Ray. Farley Dickinson. Fairly? Farley? How do you say it?
I believe they call it Farley.
Farley. Spelled fairly.
Yes.
Call it Farley. Farley Dickinson. Not Mr. Furley. Farley Dickinson punched the very first men's NCAA tournament bid in unusual fashion, which Ray said. 32 automatic bids, 36 at-large bids for a 68-team field. 5 teams are already in, Ray. 5 have cleared for their dancing shoes. Please report to the dancing floor. Fairley Dickinson won the Northeast Conference. UNC Asheville won the Big South. Drake won the Missouri Valley. Kennesaw State, first bid ever for Kennesaw Mountain Lands and Estate.
First winning season ever.
Not bad. Hey, way to rip
through. And they've been a Division I for about 20 years now.
Yeah, what did they win? Was that the Atlantic Sun Conference? Yeah. Southeast Missouri State won the Ohio Valley Conference. Sneaky deep conference, the OVC. So we'll see if Southwest Missouri State can't pick up a win. None of those names that you hear will be above a 12 seed, so.
No, Farley Dickinson will be a 16.
Maybe UNC
Kennesaw,
Asheville.
Kennesaw State, last Jerry Palm I saw, I had them as a 15, borderline 14.
Tennessee Tech, the first women's team to punch their ticket in the women's bracket. They've been joined by St. Louis, Virginia Tech, Gardner-Webb, Iowa, Washington State, South Carolina, and put them in Chattanooga.
And your plucky little Hoosier women will probably get in as well.
Probably get in. Ray, they might be a one seed.
They might be.
They might be a one seed. I haven't said a word about Indiana women's basketball all year. They are one of the best teams in the country. They probably go deeper in their tournament than the men go in their tournament, but the men just beat Michigan. We have a program director who pretends he goes to Michigan.
He drove through Michigan. Who's kidding?
He's been through Ann Arbor in order to sandwich there at least
if
twice.
If he's got a diploma, he's turned it into beer coasters.
So Indiana dusted them off
in overtime.
In overtime.
That's not a dust.
That's a dust up. How about this? We have a sports movie moment in time being ticked off over the weekend, or checked off, if you will. The movie Creed III. Which is picking up where the Rocky franchise left off.
Creed, yeah, because there weren't enough Rocky movies.
There were only 19 of them. Creed now picks up with the son of Apollo Creed. $58.6 million domestic opening over the weekend for Creed III. It is the biggest opening weekend for a sports movie in film history. How about that? Creed III was also the first sports movie to ever pass 100 million at the global box office in its opening weekend. I'm going to have to put Creed III on my list. The first Creed? Pretty good. Considering boxing movies are about as formulaic a sports movie as you can get these days. The first Creed was good. I didn't see the second Creed. Creed III? destroying it at the box office, Ray.
Well,
of any of the Rockies, have you seen those?
Saw the first one.
And that was it? That was enough?
I didn't need to see anything more.
Two is better than one. Three has Mr. T in it, which is good.
Oh, great.
And Rocky IV is, well, it's the closest the concept of a montage ever came to an Oscar. The whole movie is a video montage. It's like Rocky IV couldn't have happened without MTV. It's brilliant and awful and awfully brilliant all at the same time.
It sounds like Cocaine Bear only with people.
It sort of.
Which apparently
is slightly interested in Cocaine Bear? Slightly?
No.
No. No
interest. I've seen every review I've seen of it, and I usually don't read reviews of movies I don't have any intention to see, is that they're trying to make it Snakes on a Plane. That it's so bad that it ends up being backwards good. But I'm going to guess it falls short.
Oh,
it just stays bad.
So it's like a pug. It's like so ugly, it's adorable.
That's the theory that they thought they were going on. I mean, I saw a clip where Margot Martindale gets dragged off by a bear, which I guess is okay, but I will be comfortable missing it.
Cocaine Bear.
He's a competitor.
So we'll wish him very good luck. Thanks to George Sedano for joining us today. We want to invite you to stick around because the best of the game is coming up next, brought to you by Fremont Bank, and our man Sterling Bennett has it all for you, lovingly prepared and coming up next. Lucas, thank you very much. Grandy, thank you. For Ray, I'm Damon, and please do remember, boys and girls, it's sports. They don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.